Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to The Athletic Mind, your go-to podcast for maximizing your mental game. I'm your host, Taylor Cook, a mental performance coach and a former professional hockey goalie. Join me for open conversations about mental health, mindset, and performance. Whether you're an athlete or coach, you'll discover a wealth of tools, resources, and insights designed to transform the way you play and lead. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Athletic Mind. I'm your host, Taylor, former U Sports and pro hockey goalie, now mental performance coach, working with athletes and coaches to help transform their game. This month, I'm super excited about bringing to you some very amazing, wonderful guests that are making history in the women's sports industry. And what better way to celebrate Women's History Month than by speaking to some amazing women on amazing missions in sport. So, before jumping into our first guest of the month, as always, if you have not yet left a rating and review for the podcast, I would be deeply appreciative if you would go ahead and take a minute out of your day to do that. This is what really does help the podcast grow and reach new listeners just like you. And that, of course, is the goal, is to empower more listeners with the tools and strategies to be able to take their performance into their own hands. So if you haven't done that, please go ahead and do so. I really, really appreciate it. And if you're not following along on social, you can do that by following me, Taylor, at TaylorBCook_ on TikTok and Instagram. And you can also connect with me on LinkedIn if that's where you are as well. For those who might be interested in some group coaching and accountability, I'm looking at putting together a 3-month program where we'll have bi-weekly group coaching calls and accountability partners where athletes and coaches will be able to learn some mental coaching strategies that are going to help improve performance, help them set goals and track their progress, discuss some hot topics in sports, and more importantly, just to have a positive and supportive space where you're going to be able to get advice and support from others, and also to be able to provide that to other people in the group as well. So this is something that would be of interest to you. Please let me know. Would love to hear from you and have you join. And lastly, if you're an athlete and you want to step up your game, or if you're a coach and you want to improve the experience that you are bringing for your athletes, you can learn more about mental performance coaching at www.tailored-minds.com. You can see the show notes for the direct link, or alternatively, you can book a free 30-minute discovery call with me where I can answer all of your questions about sports performance. So, all of that being said, let's get into the interview with Sangun Lee. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Athletic Mind. I'm your host, Taylor Cook, former collegiate and professional hockey goalie, now working as a mental coach with athletes and sports coaches to help them transform their game and take their leadership to the next level. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest. I feel like at the beginning of every episode, I'm always saying we're taking so long to get these podcasts actually recorded after meeting, but today I am joined by the one and only Sangun. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I'm really excited about today's conversation, especially as we're getting into March with International Women's Day coming up and talking about a lot of the history building here. And that's exactly what you're doing, and we'll dive more into it. But welcome to the show.
Thank you, Taylor. Thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Sangen Lee. It's hard to pronounce. I appreciate how you pronounce it this time. I'm from South Korea, and I am hugely passionate about women's hockey. And that's what I've been doing for the last few years. I am a part of the International Olympic Committee Young Leaders Program. And that's how I got into empowering girls and women through ice hockey.
Oh, I just got chills. Like, that's so great. Oh, that's so awesome. And I don't even have to ask you to introduce yourself. You did it right on the spot. So thank you so much for that. And you said that you've also been playing hockey yourself amongst, you know, now being on a mission to empower young girls and women. But let's start a little bit more about Sang-eun, right? Like, when did you start playing? What inspired you to start playing? Of course, like in Korea, I feel like it's a much less popular sport, most likely. So let's hear the story.
Definitely. It was not a really popular sport, and even until now, I think so. So yeah, it goes all the way back to when I was basically able to walk. I think I heard from your story too, but it was the same case for me. As soon as I was able to walk, I was put in the ice rink nearby my place. Luckily, I was living nearby a national team, you know, ice hockey rink. So that's how I first got into short track skating. That was my first sport. So I did short track skating for a year, and then I had transitioned into speed skating. And then I did that for about 5 years. And I'd say speed skating was my strongest sport. I had the most, you know, outcomes there, being the national champion, you know. So yeah, that was when I learned excellence, I'd say. And after speed skating, I then transitioned into ice hockey, which I've been competitive for about, again, five or a few more years. And then I had a break I had to have a break from the moment I got into college. And then I didn't play for about 5 years. And then I started again here in the UK because of my project, the Dream League, which I will later tell you about. So yeah, those three sports were my main sports: short track skating, speed skating, and ice hockey. And in between those transitions, I had many episodes that it essentially brought into those transition phases. And that was being, so first of all, when I was eight, so when I competed in short track skating for a year, I had a huge issue that I had a male coach who was basically not treating me right. So back then in Korea, punishment was a thing, was still going on very, very typically in sports scenes. And even though I was a baby, I was 7 and 8 years old, I was being mistreated from the coach. And back then, I'm still very introverted, but back then I basically wasn't able to voice out for myself. So my mom basically had to pull out from the ice rink and move me to another ice rink, which became the speed skating arena I moved on to. So yeah, that was my first, you know, incident of going through the hard time in sport, which later on impacted me hugely regarding, you know, protecting the girls and women. And then in speed skating, it was a proof that, you know, feeling safe really improves your performance, because I had the really, you know, I'll say my life coach or mentor. I had a beautiful female coach who basically taught me through all the, you know, skills, not only skills, but also the life skills and, you know, how to navigate yourself as an athlete, you know, being a woman, being a young girl in this sport. So yeah, I could, you know, develop my skills to the fullest. I could also be more aware about how to, you know, be an athlete, you know, having that athletic mindset. Yeah, that was a huge growing moment for me for about 5 years. And also achieving all the medals and everything was great too. But I was an athlete who was not really, you know, obsessed about the outcomes, but more about the process. I genuinely enjoyed, you know, the process of growing, I think, and seeing the medal was like, ah, that's like, it's how, that's sports, you know, that's mm-hmm. sport, you know, when you work hard, it would pay off and you'll be visible. That was sport for me. And I genuinely could enjoy sport when I was doing speed skating. So yeah, that was when I fell in love with sport, I say. And then, but then I transitioned into ice hockey again. It was because, so basically I was living nearby the national team ice rink, but then I had to move to another province, and there I could still compete, but not on my level. So it was not mm-hmm. the highest level I could compete. Plus I was very introverted, as I said, so even, you know, I felt much safer. I wasn't able to really communicate with any boys.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bit of problem there, because I, you know, when you go to school, you have to speak to the boys, but I basically wasn't able to do that because of the, you know, the past experience, and also basically having the fear of socializing. Mm-hmm. So that's why my parents decided to put me into ice hockey team in a local club, and I had to be the only girl, as most athletes had to be. So it was a huge challenge for me, but, you know, as I said I genuinely enjoy challenging myself, and, you know, I thought that's a part of sport. So initially it wasn't that you know, huge, you know, something that I'll avoid. I just decided to face it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into ice hockey. You know, it was a bit easier for me to start with ice hockey because I could skate, basically. But it was a lot different in a way that, first of all, it's a team sport. It was my first time being a team member of something. So that was a huge, you know, challenge again. And yeah, I was able to, you know, learn how to communicate with people and how to, you know, perform with group effort. So that was a positive aspect of it. But by the time I was going to, you know, decide which college I would go to and which major I would do, it was a really big problem there, because there was no female hockey player who went to college, you know, as a hockey player. So I had to basically create my own path. And my choice there was to pursue international relations or something related to diplomacy. And that required a lot of, you know, studying right before going to college. And so basically I couldn't really keep up with, you know, being a part of the national team or, you know, competing at the level that I was competing. So that's where I had to quit, you know, when I was going to college. But I wasn't really sad at the moment, and I was never, you know, like looking back at all, because for some reason I had a huge belief that, you know, my 5 years in hockey will in some ways pay off later on. And I had a huge belief that I would definitely use my, you know, experience there for a positive impact later on. So that I had that belief, you know, even though I was quitting hockey. So I wasn't sad at all. So yeah, for 5 years in college, I wasn't playing hockey, but I would sometimes still, you know, join some recreational team trainings and sometimes go to watch hockey. And when I was in college, the Pyeongchang 2018 Winter Olympic Games happened. So by the time when the Winter Olympic Games were happening, I was called by a former coach looking for someone who can basically speak English and has experience in ice hockey, because the National Olympic Committee was looking for someone who can work with that skill set, and I was the only person who had it. So I basically started, you know, being in the backstage of the games by working as a professional assistant at the Olympic Games. Not only hockey, but I also had a chance to volunteer at the Ski World Cup before Olympic Games, and a few championships that was happening as a test event in Korea. So yeah, that was when I started to learn how to support the games, support the athletes, coaches, and referees. And it kind of, you know, navigated me to, you know, get into this way of supporting ice hockey games. And I genuinely enjoyed it. I genuinely enjoyed it because I it was just amazing that I could use my past experience and my skill set for the good and for the growth of hockey. And also, Pyeongchang was a huge moment for Korean ice hockey, because that's when the United Team Korea happened. So sport being used for peace, you know, promoting peace and something bigger than just hockey. It was just fascinating to watch, and also being able to, you know, get connected with all those people in there at the moment was kind of historic. Mm-hmm. So that's when I kind of realized the power of sport and what we call the Olympic of movement and Olympic values. So yeah, after that, you know, all these long years of learning and experiencing things, I decided to, you know, think about a way to really, you know, collect all those experiences and make it into a huge project that I've been dreaming of. So I've been dreaming of basically, you know, helping the girls who would be going through what I was going through back then. So as a female athlete, as a girl who was, you know, vulnerable in a sport, and also being a hockey player. So that's what the Dream League is.
Wow. I don't really know how else to expand here, because there's, first of all, so many things that I want to unpack and to touch on, because that's an amazing story. And I'm happy that you laid it out the way that you did and talked about some of the challenges that came up along the way, because as you know, and as many of the listeners also know, is that challenges really are what allow you to see the growth on the other side, right? And so as unfortunate as that experience was for you at a young age to have a coach who was abusive in some sense, one, obviously not okay, and I do hope that that is changing there. And I know that you're obviously working in that respect to make sure that change happens as well. But I'm also a very firm believer in, like, everything happens for a reason. And it's not to say, like, it's okay that those things happen, because obviously it's not. But you found the opportunity in that. So instead of looking at it from, like, a fixed mindset, let's say, and saying, like, oh, well, this happened to me, this really negative experience, and now I can't play this sport anymore, but I have to go and play this. Like, you didn't take it as that. You just saw it as, like, okay, I'm going to just go with the flow here. We'll transition into this. You absolutely thrived and loved the sport. You also learned that the safety aspect of being in sport also fuels your performance as well, which is really key to know. And I hope that anyone who's listening from, like, an organization or a coach understands that that's so true. Like, being and feeling safe in the environment that you're working is so important. So important.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And so, like, I'm really happy that you highlighted that. And I want to actually hear a little bit more about this, just because, like, to have 5 years of speed skating and then go into hockey and play with the boys, one, obviously a big transition from being, like, an individual sport to a team sport, but also having, like, I mean, I've seen speed skaters' legs, like, they're massive. And I don't know if yours were at that such a young age, but how did that skill set transition into playing hockey, and especially with the boys? Like, were you keeping up? Were you challenging them?
So it was very challenging for the initial few years, because, okay, I could skate, but I never used my upper body for sport in my life. So that mm-hmm. was it was as hard as just the usual beginners. So also, this is something I realized really later on. I have ADHD. I was diagnosed ADHD recently. And I think because of that, I was really finding hard to focus on a small target, or you know, when you're shooting, you have to find a, you know, empty net. And that was also really challenging for me. Like, whilst skating so hard, you have to move your upper body, you know, think about all those strategies and listen, keep your ears open to what coaches are saying. It was just too many things going on. Mm-hmm. While, you know, when I was doing speed skating, I just had to, you know, just focus on my body balance and just keep my legs moving. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot more complicated sport than I expected. And also interacting with the boys, that was a double layer there. So it was really challenging. And also, back in the days, we didn't have, As much as I found the male coaches really difficult, the coaches also found me really difficult. So because they've never, well, they had just a few incidents of coaching female, girl. So we were just finding it really hard to not make each other feel uncomfortable. I really appreciated that they were very, careful about it, but sometimes they were a bit too careful about it, so they wouldn't really push me hard to my best, best level. I'll say at the moment, I wasn't expected to play well, and I wasn't, treated as a same player as the boys. I think that was a huge issue there. So, although I wanted to, play better, I just couldn't find any big motivation to develop, and I didn't know how much I could get better. So, like, as long as I'm playing, they would just clap at me and say, "Oh, she's amazing. She's brave. She's out there." But I couldn't find the next level. So that was the huge issue there.
That's always really interesting to look at because I feel like even in my experience in talking with male coaches, a lot of them don't know how to interact with the female team, which is so funny because I feel like on the women's side, it's almost easier to coach them because like they listen to everything always. And it can kind of get, at least from my experience anyway, and even like coaching some female teams, like sometimes if you explain a drill, for example, they take like everything literally.
Yeah.
So they almost don't like have the room for creativity the way maybe the guys team does. So like, or I don't want to say guys teams, but you know what I mean? Like that's kind of been my experiences. Sometimes it's easier to coach them because they listen and they have the drive. Like they like really want to get better. They want to improve. So like they really listen a lot and they do what's asked and all of these things. But sometimes the challenges, especially for a male coach, I think is like one, the emotional disconnect is a big one. So like emotional intelligence for male coaches working with female teams, I think is really important. But also the ability for maybe like the lower level, like still developing type teams, they need to learn the creative aspect of the game. So not so technical all the time.
I like now that I think about it, if I go back to where I was there, I'll tell the coaches just treat her as the same, boy player, because it's just not I don't think it's a matter of gender. I mean, there are some general differences. Like as you said, we listen to more details. We are trying to, follow the instructions more rather than maybe sometimes less being less flexible. But, if you think about it, there are some girls who are more flexible than the boys. There are girls who are more fierce than the boys. So it's just individual, aspects. I now, like, especially living in the world where we are in, I think we just have to treat individuals as individuals, not as a boy or as a transgender or whatever queer community. I think it doesn't matter which identity we come from, which we are just players, and we start from there. Have a really just chill, free conversation and free interaction for a few months, and then you will figure out it from then. Then you can, analyze which player, what kind of player this is, and who this person is, and then go from there. So, but back then it was really hard to do that because hockey was not a big sport, so the coaches had less experience. Also, I'm coming from Korea, so in Asian country, it's the virtue to say less and be quiet. So that's what we did there. Like it was silent at the rink, and so because of that reason, I wasn't really able to enjoy hockey as much as I do now. I now play in the UK, and it's almost like a whole different sport because in the UK, I'm more like I just feel so much more dopamine from hockey because I can talk so freely, and whether that's male coach or female coach, it's much more open-minded society, and that really reflects on the ice rink too. So it's a lot more fun. It's a whole different sport for me, if you think about it. So yeah, I would say back then, if I was there, I would advise so.
And now for a quick word from our sponsor. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. Please play responsibly.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought that up, actually, because this is something that I talk about quite often on the podcast, is the importance of coaching the individual. And so, like, being an athlete-centered coach is kind of what I talk about quite frequently, because everybody is different. So how you treat one person isn't necessarily going to be the same way that you would, like, treat someone else, right? And when I say that, I mean that more so, like, everybody learns differently. So maybe this player learns this way, but this player learns a completely other way. So you're going to have to learn to adapt to those learning styles. Maybe you have a player who's a little bit more sensitive about certain topics. So then you know, okay, like, I have to approach this thing a little bit differently to a certain extent, right? Like, I understand the society that we live in now is a little bit more sensitive, and, like, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's really great. But I also feel like in the world of sports, if you want to excel, you do have to have a little bit of that grit aspect to you too. And you have to be able to handle those challenges that come up, because not everything's going to be perfect. Not everything is going to be easy. And you have to learn how to handle and cope and manage with all those things if you have any hope of getting to that next level, right? Yeah.
Be open-minded and be creative about it. And I think that this is why I have a whole big respect for coaches, because every player are in different skates or different feet, and mm-hmm. their background, their, you know, as you said, their attitude, how they perceive things, how they put off with their, it's all different. So every player is different, and I think that's why the coaching is just so amazing.
yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that, you know, you were part of the International Olympic Committee. So I think that's, like, pretty awesome, honestly, like, to be able to be part of such a great event, and obviously, like, a committee that's making a true impact in sport, I think is really, really awesome. So you want to share a little bit more about, like, how did this opportunity present itself to you? What you've been able to learn along the way, and also how have you used those learnings in driving your personal mission with the Dream League? And then we'll get into that a little bit later.
Wow, that's a big story there. So yeah, I as I told you, I had the idea, okay, I want to help the girls and women in my sport in Korea. And I just, you know, finished my Olympics experience, and I met some people there. So I had a friend who was a former young leader in Korea, so a generation before me, who was already, you know, doing her project in soccer. So she created the soccer tournament for the children coming from underprivileged society, from, you know, multicultural families and some orphanages. And I got to volunteer for her because we were friends and I wanted to learn, you know, how the program works. And it was basically amazing because, you know, sport as a tool for positive change, you know, how can be more, you know, magical. So it was amazing. You know, I was like, okay, maybe I should apply for this program next year because why not? So I applied for it, and honestly, when I was applying for this, I didn't expect at all that I'll be selected, because I wasn't an Olympian. You know, I looked at the list, you know, of the former young leaders. I was like, there's no way. But I got selected, which was amazing. And then my whole different, you know, phase of my life started. So now I can converse with you like this, Taylor. But back then in 2021, I couldn't converse with a foreigner for more than 30 minutes. So first year of the young leaders program. So the youngest program is 4 years. spent. And the first year was really about the learning and research about what my project's going to be and how I'm gonna run it. So I had to first learn about communication, how basically the leadership, you know. And I had to go to all the, you know, future participants of the Dream League and ask, okay, what do you think will be most needed in this scene? You know, I went to the Federation multiple times because there were some no's. And I pitched my ideas. I looked for the sponsors, basically all that in 1 year. So it was a huge growing phase again. And, you know, as I said, I had to bring my pitch and got back with no, but eventually it turned out as okay, maybe we can work on it. And yeah, that was our first year. And the Dream League, the initial idea was, I kept trying my best to keep it simple, but it was already a big, you know, big initiative, you know, some creating something that hasn't existed before. It's a huge change, you know, the women's game, ice hockey games in Korea, it has never existed. It has never existed for a reason because there were so many complicated dynamics in it. So I basically had to learn whole, you know, context of it and, you know, talk through with the stakeholders. And that was the first year. And then, so yeah, eventually I could work out with the sponsor who was willing to sponsor multiple $1,000s on the games, and I could persuade the National Federation to make it work. Okay, they were like very skeptical, but okay, maybe let's do it. So the next year in 2022, we launched the first league, the Dream League. And also, in addition to the league, I put together this idea of creating a women's team with female coaches, because it also didn't exist before. And I really wanted to showcase the whole community that if you have the safe space for girls like this, they could go further. And they did in the first league. They won the bronze medal out of 6 teams, which no one expected. I didn't even expect that. But they were a group of 20 players who came from all different provinces of all different, you know, levels of playing. And also the coaches, they've never met each other before. So it was a whole new team, but within less than 3 months, they became a team. And it was just so emotional at the end when we won the medal. So that was our first magical moment when we won the Dream League. So yeah, that was my first year, and it's been, it was just, there were so many ways there. I'm just telling about the good parts of it, but there were so many challenges and fighting with so many people, you know. So
that was going to be my next question, actually, is like, obviously there's been so many amazing things that have come out of this, but without a doubt there's a lot of challenges along the way, and that comes with trying to pave a new path that hasn't been paved before, right? Like, you don't know what to expect. Sometimes you have absolutely no idea what you're doing, and you just have to kind of work and find your way to where you need to go. So how did you kind of handle those challenges as they came up? Because I'm sure it could have impacted your motivation and inspiration to continue pushing forward, but clearly you overcame all of that to the point where now, like, the Dream League is functional.
So I'll keep it general, but here's a point that, okay, all the different stakeholders have different needs and different expectations about the initiative. So the key there was to really remind them continuously about the goodwill and why we're doing this. You know, we have different, you know, we want different things, but it will eventually lead these girls and women to be empowered. It's not just about ice hockey games, I don't want them to win the Olympic Games. I just want to let the girls enjoy this sport that I learned so much from. So that was the narrative there. And I think keeping up with the narrative and really not giving up on that was how it really kept it going and overcome so many conflicts on the way. So that's how it went to the second league that happened last summer, 2023. We have grown into double sides basically. There was around 120 players in the first league, but then in the second league we had more than 200 players. We had 14 teams, from six teams to 14 teams. We had to grow it into three divisions, so we could now divide the players into different levels: elite, junior, beginner level. So that was amazing. And I always kept it continuing with the data collection there too. So how many we have reached, how many coaches and refs have been impacted. So all the numbers didn't lie. So the sponsors and the stakeholders, could also really stick to what we were doing. And that's, I think, how we've been able to grow. And and also, aside from the games, I created the development programs along the way. So there was the Road to the Dream League, which was basically, as you can see from the name, I really wanted to bring all the girls who have competed at the games together and do the on-off ice training together, and do some Olympic values education, which is basically providing the life skills around Olympic values, excellence, respect, friendship. And really, I think that program, those kind of programs, really kept the girls, grow the community sense there. Oh, okay, we have our own space, safe space here, as much as the boys do. And also having the female coaches and referees there, let them be able to see their role models, or even someone who can grow with, because they are also paving their own way now. So that's always also something that really persuaded the audience there who were being skeptical about the program, I think. So yeah, so Road to the Dream League. And also after the second league, we have invited the players from Asian development countries, so Singapore, Malaysia, and Thailand. So we have shared the opportunities of having the ice and having the female coaches, trainings, and culture exchange. So that also was a really good opportunity to showcase the approach that the Dream League is doing to the global audience.
Wow. So it's really like an international project at this point. If you're having like people coming from Singapore and Thailand and other smaller Asian countries. So that kind of actually made me think, like, is the operating language then in English? Because obviously all these countries speak different languages. So
Well, for that academy, yes, I had to speak English to the visiting, players, but I kept it, local. With the Korean players, they couldn't speak English at all. I think they're very young, and also, yeah, they found it easier with Korean. So I had to translate whatever they're saying, but they could still have communication with each other with, body languages. And
Yeah,
also,
of course.
they also grew a bit of, community sense there. And that was really magical to think, because they had the sh same passion, and they could share that feeling of being a female hockey player in a country that is having that Asian, mindset, culture, and, less popular sport.
Yeah, sports is, I don't know, such a beautiful thing. It can bring so many people together, and it's like the greatest community to be a part of. So it's really awesome to see that you're building an entire new community from the bottom up in Korea, and it's also allowed other people to be part of this from other countries too, which is so amazing to see.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we are in Asia, and we can, well, we still look up to Hillary Knight or Megan Keller or all those great, American players, but also we have to also acknowledge that we need to set our own, adequate and relevant role models who can really relate to. And I think that's why approaches like the Dream League is really important. I really wish all the other communities also share that, motivation and passion, because those small steps can lead to, we have to have the small steps to have the big step to go. So yeah, that's a great point to make, I think.
Yeah, and you're so right about small steps making the big steps. It's very, very important, very key, and also staying on target and staying in the process. But obviously, you've mentioned like you've hit some milestones with the Dream League, and one actually came in January this year. So do you want to share a little bit about that?
Thanks for bringing that up. Just last month in January, we had the Common 2024 Winter Youth Olympic Games happening, and the national team who were selected through the Dream League last year, they won the silver medal at the 3-on-3 tournaments, and it was just amazing. I cannot explain otherwise. It was the first medal ever in ice hockey history to win a medal at that Olympic stage. So it was just a proof that if you invest on women's hockey, or if you invest on a sport that is neglected for so long, it can work. And that's sport, you know. As I said, if you work hard on something, there is an outcome, that and that's sport, I think. And that was the case. It really surprised many, and even the players themselves were surprised when they won China at the final rounds. And it was just amazing. And also, I have to mention the crowd. The whole, Olympic Park Stadium, the arena was full, which never happened in any women's hockey games, even the Dream League, I gotta say. So yeah, it was the first moment that also the hockey, whole hockey community was surprised. Okay, this sport has a potential to grow as a popular sport. So yeah, it's been amazing.
Yeah, oh my goodness. And it seems like in women's hockey, it sounds like rinks are selling out everywhere. So it's not a matter of people not wanting to watch. It's about the investment piece, and it's about bringing the visibility aspect to this as well. And the results speak for themselves, honestly.
Look at PWHL. I mean,
Yeah.
yeah, I would say the big movement, it's leading the small movements as well. So I really appreciate how much they're growing there. I watched the games a few weeks ago in Boston, and oh my God, I was just, I don't know. I'm not a player, or I've never competed in those international leagues, but I just felt so emotional.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Bringing this
Absolutely.
together.
Yeah, and I think I actually saw on Instagram that you were there. So I was like, "Oh, that's so nice. Like I honestly wish that I could go to a game, but flying to Canada just to go and watch. I mean, hey, you know what? It's worth it. Don't get me wrong, but
Fun, but
it's
it's
not
great.
easy."
Yeah, I had a huge expense, and yeah, it was a big reward after the Youth Olympic Games for me. So yeah,
Yeah, that's so great. And to your point about like it being super emotional, like it is super emotional. I remember when I was watching the inaugural game from my living room here in Germany, and like I was almost in tears at points, and
that's
like just chills everywhere. And I'm looking, watching this game, I'm like, I know some of these girls, I've played against some of these girls, like I'm so over the moon happy for them to actually be able to enjoy this experience,
I know.
and so excited for everything to come in the future too.
I saw the players back in Pyeongchang who were competing as Team US, Team Canada, Team Switzerland, and they were all there in PWHL Boston. I was like, I cannot imagine how happy that would be. And also at the Sunga Center, there were so many kids, whether they're boys or girls, who were cheering for them, and they were so eager to get the signs or pucks from them. And them really learning from the games, it's just that's exactly what we wanted, I think. And it goes the same with the Dream League. I wanted the next generation to be able to look up to. And I cannot keep up with the Dream League forever, so I want the future leaders to learn from it, and I really wish to take it to the next generation. So that's actually happening in the PWHL, and it's just, yeah, it was just, yeah, chills.
And that's, I'm happy you said that, because that leads right into my next question about like, what is it that you really want to accomplish with the Dream League in Korea? Like, what's the vision that you have for the future of the league, the next generation of female hockey in Korea?
I just, well, obviously, we have already proved that we need the women's game in Korea. It has to be there. So I think that we already accomplished that. But we need to really keep up with the hard work in order to really settle it down into a really stable place and make the investments still going, and have more sponsors as PWHL is doing right now. So we basically wanted to, get that sponsors in. Also, we are still in the process of persuading. Unfortunately, we still have to persuade more people, to understand why the girls and women are here, and why we're playing hockey, you know, why is it is important to keep up with the work. So that's also my one of my goals. And also, I as I said, I brought some international communities, you know, invited, but I really want to bring that more of that in the near future so that we can, the girls can also learn how to share. You know, I really want the girls to not just learn hockey, but what they're doing, what they're involved with. You know, it's about sharing and it's about building friendship, respecting others. You know, I want them to know that they are part of, you know, growing this sport, you know, not just by playing, but they also have to, you know, look for them, their future more in that areas as I did for myself. You know, okay, I was a player, but I dreamed of something, you know, something different or big. So I really want them to also dream bigger, you know, after their life as a player or a coach or a referee. So yeah, that's my vision. Hopefully it works.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have a huge drive behind you. I can see that and hear that in the way that you talk about everything over the past 40 minutes or so. And you know me, I mean, honestly, if there's anything I can ever do to help out in terms of pushing that forward and being able to partner with you, of course, that's something I'm happy to be a part of. And I love women's hockey. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I can do my very best to try and push it forward wherever I am. That's what I always try to aim to do. So yeah, absolutely. If you ever would like to have anything, you just let me know. But thank you, Sangin, for being here today, for sharing your experience, for taking us through the highs, the lows, and also the importance of safety and just like women's hockey in general. Like, that's important. So I really appreciate you being here and talking about that today.
Thank you. Yeah, we're in this together, and yeah, let's keep it going. And you know, every single person in this sport I think matters. So yeah, I'm really happy to work with you.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, usually we have people who like to reach out, maybe connect with you, learn more, maybe someone who wants to sponsor or get involved, whoever it could be. But what's the best place to reach you at? Is this on social media, email?
Basically, I'm always checking everything, so they can reach out my Instagram, my LinkedIn, my email, whatever they feel most comfortable. So yeah, please share with the community. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll put everything in the show notes below for people to go and contact you directly. So thank you again so much. It was a pleasure to have you here, and hopefully we can get you back on again in the future.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Taylor.